If I had done a little bit of checking before I went to Mexico this last time, I would have realized that it was a very bad thing to do to go to Mexico during what they call Semana Santa, which means Holy Week or Sainted Week, but it actually lasts for 2 weeks. It takes place from the week before Easter Sunday, what we call Easter Sunday around here, and lasts through that week and then the following week until Saturday of the next week, celebrating what they call Resurrection Week. And it is not the fact that it's a holiday, a religious holiday, but it is basically a national holiday. Not only that, but it's the holiday that everybody in Mexico takes off 2 weeks and travels wherever they've been wanting to go all year. And so the highways and the airports are just crammed full of people. I'll have a little bit more to say about that in a few minutes as I get into some of the details of the trip. But suffice it to say, that's a time not to go to Mexico. In fact, one website that I looked at after getting back and seeing what all I had done wrong, this website said if you find yourself in Mexico during Holy Week, then just stay off the roads and try to enjoy the scenery right where you are. The last thing you want to do is try to travel with everybody else. And that's very true. I always try to give a little bit of background for the sake of those who may not know much about the background of the Mexico work that we help to support here at Redland Road. The work is overseen by the Georgia Road Congregation in Wetumpka. The work was started back in the 1950s by Brother Joe Greer. Brother Greer was my wife's grandfather, and so I kind of married into the Mexico work, you might say. In fact, the first time that Beth and I went to Mexico together with Brother Greer, we went about a month before we got married back in 1978. You can do the math, but during the intervening years, I have been perhaps 30 or 35 times, I guess would be a conservative estimate, usually for very short trips like the one that I'll be telling you about tonight. As many of you know, I preached for many years at the congregation at Georgia Road and worked very closely in and with them with the Mexico work. And when I left there and began preaching for the Highland Gardens congregation, our elders of this congregation were kind enough to allow me to continue to work with the Georgia Road congregation in helping to communicate and do some of the traveling and so forth related to the Mexico work. That has never really faded away. It has just sort of increased along the years. But as you know, this congregation helps to support that work and plays a very active role in the supporting of the work in Mexico. And I appreciate very much the concern and the care that every one of you have expressed on so many occasions for the sake of the Mexico work. And I appreciate our elders keeping us involved in the financial support of this good work. I don't think that there is a place on this earth where we get as much or more good done for the dollars spent as with the work in Mexico. I would admit to being a little bit partial, I suppose, but I firmly believe that is the case. Several members of this congregation, as you know, have been to Mexico on various trips with me. Many of the deacons and all of them who are now elders have been down there at least once. Brother Glenn went with me one time. As you may remember, 2 years ago, a group of about six people from this congregation went February or April of 2005. And I understand that some of them are about ready to go again. And so it'll soon be time to go back to Mexico. The trip that I'm going to tell you about took place from March the 31st through April the 5th. And I was able to visit brethren in Monterrey, Zacatecas, and Puebla. And the primary purpose of the trip, or at least one of the main purposes, was to be able to make sure that the purchasing of a vehicle went through without any problem. Now, I'll be showing you some locations on the map, but just to kind of get you familiar with where we're talking about, Mexico City is located right there. From Mexico City, we flew up to Monterrey. From Monterrey, we went down to Zacatecas, and from Zacatecas back to Mexico City and Puebla. Puebla is where Brother Rodolfo Chavez lives. That's where we purchased the vehicle. And, of course, leaving Puebla then, I came back home. Started out in Birmingham, had an early flight out of Birmingham at about 6:30 on Friday morning, I believe it was, and was able to get on the plane and in the air to Dallas without any difficulty. The Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, which you see a picture of right there, is a marvelous thing. I'm glad I don't live there. It's much bigger and more congested than it looks in that picture. I believe that picture is probably far enough away. It was taken from a satellite, and you don't really get a concept of how big the DFW airport is. On the top floor of each of the about eight terminals, I think, there is a train station. And in those train stations, you line up and get ready to get on what they call the Skylink. The Skylink is very much like the underground train in Atlanta Airport, except it's elevated above everything, and it runs a very beautiful view of the airport and of the outlying areas near the airport. But you can't go anywhere without going all the way around the airport at least once or twice on the Skylink, and so that's become a part of regular fare. As you fly into Mexico City, and as I said, I've been probably 30 or 35 times, and I never fail to be amazed at the size of Mexico City, the largest and most populous city in the world. And probably 40 to 50% of the people who live there do not have access to public sanitary sewage facilities. That kind of puts things in perspective for us, at least from the standpoint of having a little better understanding of some of the things that they have to go through. But going to Mexico City or going to Mexico always involves landing in Mexico City. It's very much like Atlanta. You can't go or come anywhere else in Mexico unless you're willing to go to Mexico City. And, of course, the Mexico City airport is growing. It is amazing how fast the airport is growing. In fact, they have gone across the entire set of runways now and are building what appears to be a duplicate of the present airport. They will be connected with an above-ground train, very much like the Skylink at DFW, and that project is slated to be completed in probably 5 or 6 more years, and I can tell you right now I dread going down there when all of that is open and in operation as they move people back and forth to across that great space there to the terminals. But when I arrived at the airport, Brother Chavez and I have a place that we always meet. He watches for me until I get there, and if I get there first, I watch for him until he comes. It's about 50-50. I beat him about half the time, and half the time he beats me. But this time, I waited and waited and waited for at least an hour and a half, and he never came. And I was sure that I was in the right place. He, of course, was sure that he was in the right place. The only problem was he was down the hall and around the corner about 200 yards, and he was waiting at the place where they had just put up a new sign that said International Arrivals. The problem was the international arrivals hadn't started arriving over there at that new place yet. And so I began to really get concerned and worried about him, and he was really getting concerned and worried about me until finally he walked around the corner and came down the concourse there to where I was waiting, and of course we were exceedingly glad to see each other and happy that nothing had happened to one another. We grabbed us a bite to eat, and then of course we were to board a plane to fly from Mexico City up to Monterrey. Now, you get an impression of how far that is by looking here at the map at the state of Texas. There's San Antonio, Dallas, Fort Worth. There's Mobile, Alabama, right there in the edge of the map. And so you can see from Mexico City up to Monterrey is quite a distance, comparatively speaking, when you think about the size of the map in general. But we got on the plane after fighting all of the crowds that were there for Holy Week. It was then that I found out from Brother Chavez that this was the wrong time of the year to be traveling in Mexico. When we went to the ticket counter to check in, my ticket was stamped, approved, and everything was fine. And then he stepped up to the counter and they told him he was on standby. What that means is they've sold more tickets than the plane will hold people. And so if you're on standby, you have to wait and hope that something happened to somebody else and they don't show up to take their seat and you'll get their seat. I felt like it was a very unlikely event that he would be able to make that flight. And so mentally I began to try to do some planning and rearranging and try to figure out what we were going to do to get back together if I had to go to Monterrey without him and then wait for him to get there. Everything worked out fine, though, as we changed boarding areas about four times before the plane took off. But I guess in all of that shuffle, some of the people who had seats got lost because Brother Chavez was able to get on. And he had a seat on the plane, and we made it fine to Monterrey. The only problem was his luggage didn't make it there. We went to the ticket counter in Monterrey for Aeromexico or Mexicana, whichever airline we were flying on, and found a crowd of about 25 people. And some of them I recognized from having been on the plane that we were on, and they were looking for their luggage too. I had mine, a wonder of wonders, but they told us that it would probably be about 2 hours that the luggage would arrive on the next flight. And so instead of taking a 45-minute taxi ride at the cost of about $50 into Monterrey and then 45 minutes back at another cost of about $50, we decided we'd just cool our heels there in the airport. So we waited for 2 hours, and the flight came in from Mexico City, but it didn't have anybody's luggage on it. And so we went on to the hotel in Monterrey, about, a 45-minute taxi ride. I don't know why they say that's the Monterrey airport. It's nowhere near Monterrey, but there's really not anywhere else that it's close to either out there in the Sonoran Desert. And so we went on into Monterrey and checked into the hotel that we always stay in. One of the things that will always amaze you if you go to Monterrey is how many big, nice, modern buildings and American names you'll see there. Not only will you see Best Western and Sheraton and all of those kind of hotel names, you'll also see, of course, Walmart and Sam's Club. And I wouldn't be surprised to turn a corner down there and find a Winn-Dixie in Monterrey. It seems that Monterrey is somewhat Americanized, or at least attempts to be. But rest assured, it's not in America. And so there are a lot of things about it that will never be Americanized. But we went to the hotel, and when we got to the hotel, we were met by Brother Alfonso Secondino and Brother Pablo Rivera. I apologize for the poor quality of this picture. It was the only picture that I made of Brother Alfonso and Brother Pablo together. Brother Alfonso, on the right, preaches for the church in Torreon, Mexico, which is a couple hundred miles east or west, southwest of Monterrey. In order to save time for this trip, we had gotten Brother Alfonso to come to Monterrey so that we could visit with him at the same time we were there with Brother Pablo. Now, Brother Alfonso is Brother Rodolfo Chavez's wife's brother-in-law. He's married to Rodolfo's wife's sister. He is the man who was converted late in his life. I say late, comparatively speaking. He was almost 60 years old before he was converted to Christ. And in the years before that, during all of the time that he was married to Rodolpha's wife's sister, he lived a very wild and wicked life. He was a drunkard. He was not faithful to his wife nor his family, but somehow they raised three children. And then at about 60 years old, he was finally, after many years of work with Brother Chavez in trying to convert him, he was finally baptized into Christ and gave up those wicked ways that had caused so much heartache to his family. And it was along about that time that his wife began to give up on the idea that she would ever have a Christian for a husband. And for many years, she became unfaithful and was unfaithful to the Lord's church. They lived apart for a time, and every time I would see Brother Alfonso, he would just cry and cry as he told us about the difficulty that he had brought into his own life by the way that he had lived. And then finally, when he changed, it looked like it was too late, that he had lost his wife. I'm very happy to say that they are back together now, living in the same house. They are both in less than good health. She requires much more care and attention than he does, and thus he does a very good job of taking care of her and seeing after her. And that has brought them closer together, I believe. But it's a very sad story, but a very true illustration of what happens in so many lives when people refuse to live right and then finally decide to change and live right, and they discover so many scars that will not go away, so many problems that seem to continue to exist. Brother Alfonso preaches for one of the congregations in Torreon. Torreon is the location of one of the Bible schools, preaching schools that our brethren helped to support in Mexico. There are several congregations. The congregation he preaches for is probably about 50 or 60 members. Brother Alfonso is in his early 70s. He does not have the benefit of years and years and years of experience as a Christian and study and influence of the Scriptures, but he tries very hard, has a lot of difficulty, but I don't think there's anyone that has ever made any more effort than he has. Brother Pablo Rivera is not a very handsome guy to look at. He is blind, totally blind. Usually wears sunglasses, and so you never see his eyes for some reason. On this occasion, he did not have his glasses on. He went blind when he was about 20 years old, during the time that he was working on a master's degree in sociology. He is very well educated, very intelligent. He was converted along about that time. And since his conversion, he has not looked back. He has been one of the most dedicated servants of the Lord that I believe I have ever met. He works under tremendous difficulty because he is blind. He has to have someone to lead him everywhere he goes. He reads from a Braille Bible, which is about that thick, carries it around with him most of the time. He has Braille songbook that he uses when he leads singing at the church that meets there in Monterey. On Sunday morning, we got up and we met Brother Pablo there at the church building, and we're there a little bit early, and so we went next door into the home of one of the church members and had a cup of coffee since he routed us out of the hotel before we'd had time for our breakfast. And so we enjoyed a little while of visiting with them before the worship services began. There were about 35 people in attendance there. They normally have about 50 or 60. Many of them, you guessed it, were traveling because they were off for Holy Week, and so they were not there. But we enjoyed our time with them. We were encouraged by Pablo's zeal. He has a radio program that he is on the radio 3 days a week. at last count, over the past 5 years since they have been keeping records, I'm told that over 250 people have been baptized just as a result of contact through that radio program. The radio program is on from 3 o'clock in the morning until 4:30 in the morning. Now, if this brother, who's totally blind, does all of his radio programs live, reads out of a Braille Bible, doesn't have the benefit of being able to study all of the resources that most of us have who are sighted or can see, if he can lead that many people to Christ with a radio program that's aired from 3 to 4:30 in the morning 3 days a week, what could this man do with a program in prime time or with even a television program? We have tried to encourage Brother Pablo as much as we can. In fact, we are currently sending a little bit of extra money to Monterey for the purpose of trying to keep that radio program going without any difficulties, and Brother Pablo is doing a tremendous job. On Sunday afternoon, after eating lunch with one of the families there in the church, we got a ride from one of the local men back out to the airport, and we left Monterey, and from Monterey, which is right there, we flew down to Zacatecas. The only problem is when you go from Monterey to Zacatecas, you have to go all the way back to Mexico City and then up to Zacatecas. Again, it's kind of like Atlanta. You know, you have to go there first in order to get to anywhere else. Still, it beats driving. The road trip, if you ride a bus from Monterey down to Zacatecas, is about 11 hours. Now, the road is fairly good, but the seats are mighty hard on that bus. A ticket will cost you close to $100 by the time it's all said and done. And then you've got to eat and all of that. And so an airplane ticket to fly from Monterey to Zacatecas is usually $130 to $150. And, you know, in my book, it's worth $50 more just to fly on the airplane and get there a whole lot quicker, even if you have to go to Mexico City first and then fly back. That's kind of the way things work there. We went to Zacatecas. Zacatecas is one of the most beautiful towns on the face of this earth. It is filled with architecture from the 17th and 18th century. It is one of the three colonial cities of Mexico that were settled extensively by the Spanish colonials when they came into Mexico and conquered the native Indians who were living there. Downtown Zacatecas is full of this old architecture and is a wonderful place so far as those who are interested in history. I don't know who this fellow was, but he's dressed in period dress. I say period, period that would be from the early 1900s or late 1800s. Thought that was an interesting picture and wanted to include it, but that's how someone would look. A man would look in Zacatecas 100 to 120 years ago. This is Brother Antonio Castaneda. Antonio is one of the men that we support in Zacatecas. Juan is his nephew. Juan Castaneda is also one that we help to support. Marcus Castaneda is the brother of Antonio, the first man that I showed you the picture of, and Marcus is supported by the Catoma Street congregation in Montgomery. The Catoma Street congregation has supported Marcus for many, many years. We've been actively supporting Antonio and Juan for at least 20 years that I can recall for sure. They all three work together in and around Zacatecas. Zacatecas is a large city, probably 2 or 3 million people, and there is a lot of potential there for growth. There's a lot of potential there for more congregations. Catholicism is excessively strong in Zacatecas, and that poses some tremendous challenges. On Monday afternoon, we were out walking around, and I saw this hotel, the Buena Vista Hotel, right up the street from Brother Marcus's house where we were staying. And I made this picture specifically for Danny Raines and Brother Joe McCullough. And Danny's a structural engineer and understands how important concrete and rebar can be. But, you know, this was amazing to me to see everything in Mexico is just kind of done as you need it. If you want to add on some area to your house, and maybe your house sits on the edge of the cliff, you start down at the bottom and you start building up some kind of system to hold it up. And, you know, you don't let little obstacles get in the way. The Buena Vista Hotel needed this driveway and expanded area, and so they went down to street level and started with some concrete footings, not very big, I might say. And on those footings, they built up this elaborate system of pier. I think I can get you a little closer. Some of their wooden formwork is still visible there in the near foreground. Let's get just a little closer. There we go. I was amazed at how they had built out over the edge of this cliff. And Brother Chavez asked me if I wanted to go up there to the hotel. I said, "Not on your life, mister. I'm not going close to that place. It may fall off in the street." Just an amazing feat there. They've built one, two, three, four, looks like four or five stories on top of all that. I guess that's what we call banjo work, Brother Joe. But I was impressed enough to make some pictures standing there on the side of the road, but I didn't want to go for a visit. But later on that evening, one of the Castaneda brethren asked us if we wanted to go up on the mountain. They refer to that place as La Bufa, which means the bluff. It is the site of an old monastery that was built back in the 1700s, and it overlooks the city of Zacatecas, and one of the most beautiful sights that you'll ever see. It was almost dark when we left, but by the time we got up on that high mountain overlooking the city, we could still see a lot of the sun, and I was able to make some pictures and get some shots of the city as the lights began to come on. We left there, and it looks a lot like Brother Marcus is doing some kind of rooster dance, but that's not really what he's doing. He's gesturing and showing Brother Chavez how they're going to work on that expansion of the church building. It looks like a tornado's been through there from all the material you see piled up in the background, but that's actually just excess stuff that's placed there very carefully so that they'll be able to use it as time goes on. This is another case of where they just, you know, if they want to add on a big room, they start building some columns, and before long they're going between the columns with some concrete beams, and then they'll go between the beams with a concrete slab, and behold, you have another big area of building that you can use. This is the church at Zacatecas there that meets right across the street from where Brother Marcus lives. He's showing us some details about the construction that will be taking place soon. We left Zacatecas right here, and we went to Puebla. Now, we flew, yes, and of course we had to stop in Mexico City just for general purposes, and then flew on over to Puebla, where Brother Chavez lives. I did not take this picture. I've never been up on this particular mountainside, but it's located right outside the city of Puebla, and one of the most beautiful shots of Mount Popo in the background, which is an active volcano. In the foreground, the building that you see there is some kind of church building or cathedral that was built by the Spaniards. It was the site of an Indian pyramid, Aztec Indian worship, I suppose, and the Spaniards destroyed the pyramid and built this cathedral there back in the late 1700s. It serves to illustrate just how beautiful the land of Mexico is. Here's another shot looking in the other direction back over the city of Puebla. Puebla is, again, one of the three colonial cities of Mexico and dates back to the 1600s, 1700s, when the Spanish used it as a very important city. It's full of the old architecture and buildings and cathedrals. Beautiful place to wander around in and just see the sights. Of course, all the sights are dirty. Everything is dirty in Mexico. I see Brother Mark Russell shaking his head. Yes, we've been privileged to see some of the dirtiest places on this earth together, and all of them we saw together were in Mexico. It's amazing how much filth there is that is generated, and the advent of plastic and disposable containers has made an incredible impact on the landscape of what at one time was some of the most beautiful area on this earth. In Puebla, as I said, that's a shot of one of the downtown streets. The traffic can be very congested at times. A lot of those streets are one way. Sometimes it's impossible to tell if they are or not for sure until you get about halfway down a street. Parallel parking, usually on at least one side of the street or maybe both sides, and then sometimes double parallel parking on a one-way street. And so it really gets to be a puzzle when you try to drive in Mexico, not something that I would advocate. This is not Brother Chavez's car. It's just like his, except his is silver. I did not see Brother Chavez's car. All of the work that I did in trying to get the thing purchased, it was not at the local dealership, but had to be brought in from somewhere else. And Brother Chavez, I was leaving the next day. Brother Chavez was leaving the next day to go on a week preaching trip in some other town. And so the car was going to be delivered in about 10 days. But I understand that it was everything that we had hoped for. It was exactly what we purchased, except it was silver in color. Which is, well, it's what we wanted, but it was very interesting. We got back to Zacatecas on Wednesday, to Puebla on Wednesday morning, and immediately went to town, and I waited for Brother Chavez in town, in the city, for about 2 hours. I followed him around from place to place as he deposited the money, the support for each of those brethren in their bank accounts so that they would have access to the money that we send down there. He had to do all of that. Then he had to pay his phone bill and his power bill. All of that took about three and a half hours, because you can't go or you can't stay at home and mail your power bill payment to the power company, because somebody will figure out there's a check in that envelope and it'll never make it across town. Same thing with the telephone bill and everything else. It has to be paid in person, because the mail system, even within a city that is so large as Puebla, probably 20 million people live there. One of the most corrupt postal systems anywhere in the world. And so we spent about half a day taking care of that business that has to be taken care of once a month. And then we went to the automobile dealerships, and we knew that we had about $30,000 to spend for a vehicle. That was the amount of money that had been raised. We were going to transfer the money directly from the bank here in the United States to the bank of the dealership's choice. That was done so that I wouldn't have to go down there with $30,000 cash in my pocket. I might not have come back for several reasons. But at any rate, we went to the Dodge dealership, and we had figured that we wanted a Dodge Dakota, and sure enough, it was going to cost about $30,000 the last time Brother Chavez had been by there and gotten a price, except when I came with him, for some reason, the price had gone up $5,000. And one of the largest automobile dealerships in the third largest city in the country of Mexico, and there was not a soul there who could speak English. And I certainly couldn't speak enough Spanish to carry out that kind of a transaction. And so I discussed this matter with the salesman there, using Brother Chavez as an interpreter. Brother Chavez is a fine interpreter. He's not a very experienced businessman. He doesn't understand how transactions like that work. He sometimes doesn't understand all the terminology, and he will just get as close as he can, thinking that that's close enough. He doesn't do that when he preaches, but he was doing that this time with this transaction for the automobile. And so I could see that we were not going to make any progress getting the price back down to the original quoted price of $30,000. And so I said, tell the man, Rodolfo, that we thank him for his time. I've got to fly out of Mexico City on Thursday anyway. We'll just go to Mexico City and buy a vehicle. And so I said, you tell him exactly that. Tell him exactly like I said it. And he did, and the salesman shook his head yes, and Brother Chavez told him we were leaving. And so he handed us a card, and he said, if you change your mind, come back, or something to that effect. And as a second thought, he asked Brother Chavez for his telephone number, in case he needed to contact him for any reason. Well, we left the dealership and went to find us a place to eat lunch. We had Sister Carlotta with us, along with Marlene, their granddaughter. And we ate lunch and then went back to their house. Took about an hour, hour and a half, I suppose. And by the time we got back there, there was a message for Brother Chavez. What do you know? They have found a vehicle for the price that he had quoted us originally. The only problem was it was white. We didn't want a white one. So we went back to the dealership, and we talked with him about that, and he assured us that if we could wait a few days, then there would be no problem with getting a silver one, which was the color that they wanted. And so we told him that would be fine, asked him about the details of transferring the money, and he said that would be no problem. He would furnish us with the bank name and address and routing number, and we could furnish that to the bank in the United States, and the money would be transferred, and there would be no difficulty with that. Oh, yeah, yeah, I believe that, all right. After all the difficulty we'd had so far, I wasn't sure that I wouldn't have to come back to Mexico again to bring the money, because I was convinced that this wire transfer business between the banks wasn't going to work. He gave me all of the necessary numbers. I got Beth on a cell phone and gave her the numbers, and she called or got in touch with the right people who went to the bank that Georgia Road uses where the money was, gave them all of those numbers, and the money was transferred within an hour. It was unbelievable. It was amazing to me how efficient that aspect of everything was versus how inefficient everything else there is in the way that it works. But the bottom line is that we were able to purchase the vehicle. The vehicle is providing excellent service now. We had to pay a little bit of extra cash money out of my pocket for the tag. And this was another case of are you sure this is exactly what he said? Yes, I'm sure this is exactly what he said. And then the guy came back out and he says, now that'll be an additional $605 for the tag. When you buy a new vehicle in Mexico, you pay the dealer for the tag and for the first year's insurance. That's interesting to me, but at any rate, they said we needed $605 more. Brother Chavez, I thought I told you to ask him, was that all of the money that they needed, the very bottom line? Well, yes, that's what I asked him, and that's what he said. But we owe him $605 more. I said, well, I just happen to have $800 just in case something like this happened. And so we were able to transact that deal, and everything worked well. We went back to Brother Chavez's house happy and satisfied that we had accomplished our mission. And it appears that all is well there with the vehicle. This is the most recent photograph that I have of Brother Chavez. Carlotta, his wife, and Marlene, their granddaughter who lives with them. Sister Chavez, since I have been there, has undergone some surgery on one of her legs. and is doing very well now, recovering to the point that everything is just about normal. I'm not sure what kind of surgery it was, but it was evidently something pretty complicated. Brother Chavez continues to travel. He travels every month, at least once a month, to a little remote area about 250 miles from where he lives, up in the mountains, a place that I visited several years ago where they have no communication, no telephone, no radio, no television. They live in mud-floored, grass thatch roofed huts, we would call them. They cook in a community cook shed over an open fire. Everything there is several decades behind everything else in the country. They have no running water, of course, no sewer facilities. No one in the village even owns a vehicle. When the weather's bad, Brother Chavez has to walk about 2 miles. That's as close as he can get. But they are a group of some of the strongest Christians that we are familiar with there in Mexico. And they're continuing to grow. And the more he goes to visit them, the more other people in the area want him to come and preach to them. It's almost like it's from a different time, a different era. It's amazing that there are people who are still hungering and begging for someone to come and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to them. The Mexico work is going well. Brother Chavez is in his mid-60s. I believe he's 66 or 67. To my knowledge, there is no one who will step up and take his place when something happens to him. That bothers me very much. There are not very many younger people who are very much interested in the Lord's work in Mexico because there is too much to be found in technology and on the internet and with growing businesses and all of the progress that is taking place there that has introduced worldliness to the Mexican people in a dose that is in far greater proportions than we have ever seen at one time in this country. And so I ask you, as we continue to support that work, to continue to remember them in prayer and pray for the continuation of that work and for the longevity of it and for the succession of others who will step up and take the place of those who are working diligently now but who are getting up in later years and perhaps don't have very many more years to live. Thank you again for your support of this good work and for your encouragement to me and to others who are involved in a very personal way in this work, and continue to remember all of it in your prayers.